Welcome to Third Fridays, the monthly legal talk show from Lois LLC featuring attorney Christian Cisson. This is the original forum in which real attorneys discuss workers' compensation issues, share their opinions, and engage in colorful conversations. This show showcases diverse perspectives of attorneys handling workers' comp cases, including case law trends, practical litigation strategies, and hot topics. Here's your host, Christian Cisson.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the March 2024 edition of the Third Fridays podcast. My name is Christian Cisson. I'm so excited. Well, for one, it is my birthday month, so it's obviously the best month of the year. But we're rocking and rolling in 2024. Like, after this month, can you guys believe it's going to be 25% over 2024? So if you missed last month's episode, I had my partner Jeremy Janis come on to talk about the board's decision to overturn years and years of persuasive precedent about how an RFA2 pleading is filed and when the board would have to respond, and how that affects your ability to reduce or suspend retroactive awards. It's a really interesting listen because it involves due process. Have a listen, and basically anytime you can hear Jeremy Janis talk about workers' compensation, you have an opportunity to really learn something. Today, we're gonna talk about a very, very new decision from the board. It was issued in February 22nd, so that's a few weeks old, and it was a result that my guests today were actually pretty surprised to see, just based on the fact pattern. Now, it's not our case, so we can't take credit for it, but we are not here to do that all the time. Sometimes we do just want to give you updates on the law that are produced by other firms. There are other people out there besides us, even though we are the best. So let's welcome them to the show. Senior Associate Olivia Barna and Paralegal Brenna O'Brien. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here.
Super excited. Just a little bit nervous. It's okay.
Yes.
I forgot that we were both March birthdays, so.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have that awkward photo on Third Friday. just lined up and have, someone yell our names as the firm celebrates getting 1 year older. So the interesting thing about this case is kind of how it's set up, right? So I think the thing I like most about board panel decisions is that when they're issued, it's a very quick way to kind of get the lay of the land, right? I think they do a really good job with table setting facts, right? So yeah. What we have is an occupational disease claim for the left shoulder, left wrist, and both knees. And they start off by saying in the C3, the claimant states that over the course of 27 years as a union carpenter, I sustained injuries from repetitive trauma, right? Like, okay, baseline statement, that means nothing to me, right? Like, I was just like, okay, nothing. So what does the board panel do to actually table set right after that statement? Brenna, how do you think that the rest of that paragraph plays out to help you understand the claim?
I think it specifically lays out his job duties. I think that, that definitely helps with figuring out what he did, how he would injure the left shoulder, left wrist, and both knees. There's not any, specific, weight limit or poundage.
Which we can't expect him to have.
Right.
But so when he says lifting and carrying heavy materials, lumber and plywood, installation of walls and framework, pouring concrete, unloading and loading materials from trucks, cutting plywood, using hammers, sledgehammers, drills, sawzles, going up and down ladders and scaffolds. To me, okay, it's a little bit more specific than I was a carpenter for 27 years, but also what I don't know from that is how long you were doing each of those things, right? How many hours did you work a day? How many days did you work a week? How many weeks did you work during a year? And so my mindset with those types of claims and those allegations is this is like a retirement push, right? Like you're done, right?
Definitely.
Right. You just think of that like old person that used to like tell you about their time. They're like, I used to walk 15 miles in the snow to school both ways and I didn't complain.
Uphill, downhill.
Right. Exactly. Right. That's what I look at these occupational claims as, is that, look, I was a carpenter for 27 years.
Yeah.
And now please pay me.
Yeah.
Right.
My hard earned work.
Yeah.
Now contrast that with when he goes to his medical doctor, right, Olivia? So like, what does he then say to the doctor who shall remain nameless?
You know, he goes over his job duties, but in like a different aspect. You know, there's mentioning of walking, climbing, kneeling, wearing a harness, certain tools. You know, there's, again, like you just said, there's no indication of how long he worked, how heavy he lifted, how long did he stand? Things that were also specific to a carpenter. You know, I walk, I stand, for example.
Right, right.
There's no distinct features, which is, you know, obviously the key in an occupational case. But the doctor made sure to say that everything was repetitive, and specifically over a certain amount of period, he developed pain, which caused these injuries, which is the only reason why he has these injuries to his left shoulder, left wrist, and bilateral.
Not to mention, right, like, right, all these things that we're doing, like, yeah, we do them in our life as well. Like, yeah. Even some of, like, the work activity, right? Like, I think, you know, people would probably never think that I would have a screwdriver in my hand at any point in my life, but I have, okay? Like, yeah. It's rare, but
I
use them, see? Right? We all use them. I think that the interesting part of this paragraph, right, what does he say at the end? I am the first physician to see him for this.
Yeah.
He reports he last worked October 9th, 2022. Like, what do you think this doctor, why is the doctor saying that?
Well, he knows workers' comp, I think, a little bit.
Yeah,
I know the doctor well, and, you know, the statute of limitations stating that this is the first time he's ever sought treatment or attempted to seek treatment for these injuries.
Yeah.
To do 27, oh, actually 6 years of pain, but over his.
But definitely mentioned the work status.
Yeah.
You know, how long he was feeling the pain. I think he knows his way around this for sure.
He's justifying it, right? Mm-hmm. So he's saying over the last 6 years he developed pain. So 6 years ago he developed pain from doing these duties, right? But 6 years ago he didn't want to retire.
Right.
Right. 6 years ago he wanted to collect a paycheck.
Yeah.
So, you know, his statute of limitations should start there, but it's almost like the doctor's trying to cure it by saying, I am the first physician to see him for this. Saying like, oh, the claimant never knew that he had these injuries as related to his job. Never. He could not until I saw him.
Yeah.
Now I see him and I'm telling him that it's related to, right, his repetitive trauma at work.
And I made sure to note that it was secondary to the trauma.
Right, right, right. And so, of course, there's a low burden for, you know, a law judge accepting a medical report. So it gets set for trial. The carrier and employer in this case, they obtained an IME report that essentially disputes causal relationship. I don't think that there's anything, you know, noteworthy other than that.
Okay.
You know, maybe interestingly, the claimant's saying to the IME doctor that he reports that pain started in 2022 and not 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting, because if you can actually restrict the time that, like, late 2022, my thinking is maybe this is not an occupational claim at all. What if this was actually just one accident that you didn't tell your employer about in 30 days, and you're just like, oh, well, I have 2 years for occupational. Maybe I just convert it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been some cases where a claimant will file an occupational claim saying, like, this occurred over the years, but we've been able to produce, like, employee personnel files saying, like, no, this didn't occur over years. Like, this apparently happened to you just 1 year ago, and you didn't tell anybody because it was when you had this accident. And it's this really like, okay, let me use this occupational shield, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, which surprises me because I feel like not knowing the specific details of it, maybe as a claimant, you could think maybe it's harder to prove as an occupational disease. So it's interesting if this was the route he took, which probably, but that he would go this route, to me, at least.
I think it's a good point, because it actually sheds light on like why these claims exist. You know, if he really had pain 6 years ago, right, and it's been the same throughout, right, like what happened at the end of your time that was like, you know what, this pain is too much.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do this, right? What you're really after, and especially because you're alleging schedule loss of use sites, you're after that award that doesn't have to do with when you lost time from work, you know, this crazy criteria that, you know, like, oh, I have loss of motion here. No, give me like thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. It's, you know, it just makes me feel proud to kind of be on this side, honestly.
Yeah.
That we're not like putting forth those types of arguments. And when you get to the next paragraph, right? And the thing that strikes me the most is when the board panel is starting to get a little like spicy, right? So they say, like, they're talking about this MRI, and then in the sentence, like second line from the bottom, the doctor attributed this to, quote, years of doing his job, right? There's just like this blanket statement.
So that, vague.
Yeah, like they're already unhappy.
Sarcastic.
Right. A little bit. And so as you're reading this, it's just like, okay, like, yeah, let's, now we're getting into it, right?
I know where this is going.
And then, so you have the trial, claimant testifies that he worked, right? And he has these injuries. And then he testifies to all of the stuff that he was doing, right? Mm-hmm. What do you guys like? What were your first thoughts of when you see how the testimony was really summarized by the board panel here? So they spent like 4 or 5, 6 paragraphs just summarizing exactly what he testified to at the trial. Like, what, when you were reading that, any thoughts that came to mind?
I think they were highlighting the distinctive job duties as a carpenter, to eventually, you know, not to give away, compare and contrast to, you know, what the doctor knows and determine, you know, were these activities the cause of the doctor's opinion? Because they really lay out, you know, the size of the wood he was lifting, his belt tool full of tools, listed all the tools. He wore it for a whole day. So they, you know, they go through days, weight, job duties, standing on scaffolds, kneeling 40 hours per week in a position, sometimes worked overtime. So they're really highlighting what would technically, I think, fall under that category of an occupational disease claim in his testimony. And like I said, to eventually compare to the doctor's opinion.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going too, right? The claimant's so descriptive here, mm-hmm. you know, saying like, this is like the length of the, or the, I guess the length and weight of like the wood that was, I was involved with using, right? Like I was wearing this type of equipment for the entire day. This is like the reason I would be kneeling was to perform this job. And all of a sudden you now are extracting details from the claimant that were not provided to the doctor, right? And for instance, put yourself in the shoes of actually having an ailment and wanting to get fixed by the doctor, right? When you go to the doctor, it's an open book. Like, I will tell you my life story.
Everything.
Like, just in case.
Right. Like, I'm that person, like, that in the doctor's office, I will fill the intake sheet, like, so descriptively. Like, what do you want to know about? I'm like, I'll tell you exactly everything, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, you want the most accurate diagnosis and treatment, you know, right. If you actually have an ailment and you want to get better.
Right. Because like, you don't want to be misdiagnosed. You don't want to like, you know, have the doctor not have that information, which is the difference that we have here in this workers' compensation arena, that a lot of these claimants, they'll go there and they know that getting the medical report is the first step to getting money. Mm-hmm. So they hear these things from their attorneys or their coworkers and say, go to this doctor, say this, right? And all those things. And now you have the testimony where they're saying, everything that's just a little bit more descriptive, because questions that are being posed are by attorneys trying to either make a claim, right? The claimant side, they're going to tell them exactly what you did. Like, get into it. Get into detail about how awful it was to work for 27 years, right? A job that you chose to do, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then on our side, we're actually almost in line with that. Like, tell me all of that, right? Because now we are able to display that this was not what was provided to the treating doctor.
Right. In the beginning.
And I think he was prepared well by his attorney. Like, even from the C3, like, I don't think a carpenter would have listed all those activities.
Sure.
And then the way he testified, obviously
he was groomed.
Prepared. Yeah, they prepared his testimony to align with.
Especially, yeah, you're probably right. Because I think that it's not like there was a lot of, nuance to this. Like, it was just tell them what you did. And then the end, he says, he stopped working because, quote, I was feeling a lot of pain, right? I was just like, okay, that's subjective. And then that question at the end, I guess it was adjourned, and the claimant comes back to testify, and he states, no doctor had advised him to retire. I was like, okay, so now, like, we're slowly building, and this is like the part of like the decision reading where I'm just like, okay, like, what's happening next? Give me all the episodes of Love is Blind right now, please. Like, don't make me wait until next week.
Yeah.
Right? So then the parties like note their summations, and the judge establishes the claim, right?
I mean, I think it's interesting. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
That he also stated he'd been feeling the pain for about 5 months before he started working, and didn't he previously say it was for 6 years?
Oh, that's a great point. I didn't even see that in terms of like the impact of his testimony.
Yeah, a little inconsistent.
Yeah, you're right. He said he had been feeling this pain for about 5 months before he ceased working. Then
he applied for retirement.
He also has to qualify for retirement. You can't just
retire. Need like service time to get a pension.
For the union specifically, you need to be working for a certain amount of years. So 6 years ago, he probably didn't qualify.
Right.
Yeah, and it was a plan.
When he's going to the doctor, he's saying, there's just like, how long has it been hurting? Like, I could just see those doctors. Like, how long have you been in pain? Like, 2 years? Three? Four?
Six?
Five? Just tell me when to stop. I'm gonna like keep putting my numbers up, right?
Pick a hand.
Right? And so 6 years now becomes 5 months.
Right.
Right. I know we're all joking here, but like, sometimes you have to, because these cases are so incredible. Like, there's nothing really wrong other than the wear and tear that we're all going to experience. I'm not as athletic as I was when I was 25, but it's not because of my job.
Yeah, he probably had reduced range of motion regardless.
I mean, he's just getting older.
Yeah.
We all get there.
I mean, he says that he stated he was repetitively using his arms at work. I'm like, don't we all, for the most part? I mean, maybe not to the extent that he does, but yeah. I mean, using your arms is a daily thing for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the judge establishes the claim, right? And right before the end, we know that these things happen. The reason being, well, the job was physical in nature, right? And so off the bat, think to ourselves, like, well, like, does that mean that you can't get occupational claims if you're just desk workers like us? Like, that's not fair, right? Just because they have access to a type of claim because they have a physical job. Mm-hmm. Required him to engage in various repetitive activities with numerous tools and equipment. Just basically saying, hey, all you carpenters out there, you don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Just be a carpenter.
Basically, right? Yeah.
He found that these job activities were distinctive features of the claimant's employment. Again, the guy was a carpenter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So you have.
Thank you.
Like, great. And then Dr. Hecht is credible. Well, now I've said his name. It's fine. This is a matter of public record.
Yeah, true.
And the diagnostics support a compensable claim. Okay. Wonderful. now we get to an appeal because obviously we're here. And, you know, all along this time, our listeners probably now expect that this employer and carrier have succeeded, because obviously, why would we talk about it? But before we dive into the legal analysis, I know when we guys talked, when you guys talked about it with me, there was at least a little bit of a, like, a surprise, like, whoa, the board panel like reversed this one, right? So just like, yeah, obviously the board panel reversed this one. Mm-hmm. No secret, no hints, right? And we're obviously talking about it for a reason. So what was the surprise that you guys felt, like, you know, how can you articulate that?
Just based upon my experience with my own occupational claims, this had more information than most doctors usually get. So I was surprised. And the testimony was very detailed. You know, I've had cases where it's just generic. Oh, I'm lifting. And the doctor says, oh, he lifts for a living. And that's it. Doesn't know day's work, doesn't know anything. Yeah. And judges establish it. Obviously, you know, appealed. And, you know, results vary, but I felt just in the scheme of things, this one was on a more detailed basis, where I was surprised that the board panel found that this wasn't enough, when typically, you know, as carriers, they have an uphill battle and appeals to begin with.
Right, right.
So, like, this wasn't, I didn't think, like, a blowaway case to win on appeal.
Right. It's almost like you're saying this was not the work of the defense firm, so it's really not. They got this win.
Respectfully.
The board really started to finally understand the process. Yeah, I clearly a joke. I'm sure the defense firm on this did a great job. You know, you may have less and then get a claim established, and you may have more and you get the claim disallowed. I think that's part of, like, the fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It's never the same.
But is it surprising also just because there was a change? Like, is there any other surprises that you guys felt were apparent in this one?
I wouldn't call it a surprise, but they definitely looked at the weight of the medical evidence really strongly here versus the claimant's testimony. You know, the claimant appeared to come off credible, you know, based upon his really detailed testimony, which was probably prepared in advance. So they really spent the time to compare and contrast what the doctor actually knew versus what the claimant told
I'm
the board.
Curious though, because the board panel only mentions one medical report from the treating doctor. Was that it?
That's it.
I mean, because to me, I mean, I know that historically that is sometimes enough, but just the one medical report and then an IME, you know, refuting that, I don't know. I mean, that to me, that's why I'm not surprised with the board panel somewhat overturning it, because it's just one medical report. But I don't know, I guess I'm a little indifferent about it.
That's not a bad idea, because I guess in theory, if this injury was so significant, then maybe you'd be going to the doctor more often.
Right.
Right. Like, what are there's no comment about, like, what treatment.
I think they say
it needs.
Yeah, I think
anything.
They say he didn't treat. Yeah. Like, he didn't seek treatment afterwards.
So one doctor, one time, one IME.
Right.
And then, oh.
Maybe this is just bad advice, right?
Yeah.
Like, he got bad advice from a coworker.
Yeah.
Saying, like, you just go see this guy.
They still get a lot of money for it.
Oh, well, yeah. Might as well take a shot.
Yeah.
Get it. You know, shoot or shoot. So I think it is very surprising to me, because I've had the same experience with you, Olivia, that, you know, when we have these files, like, we're putting so much effort into saying, like, look, this is a retirement program that's not, like, codified in the law. Like, mm-hmm. This is not fair that you can just say what you did for 27 years and then claim that you have pain. Like, what does that actually mean? You know, mm-hmm. Like, when you go back to, like, the diagnoses that this doctor gave, like derangement,
mm-hmm.
like, everybody has that,
yeah.
Right? Like, I have some on my shoulder right now. I have shoulder derangement,
yeah.
Right? Like, I don't understand how that, like, creates the idea, because it's really just a precursor to a schedule loss of use report.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read this decision, like, more often, like, and again, I keep coming back to the end where it says, The doctor merely noted generalized job duties of carrying, lifting, and using tools. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even though this is not the appellate division saying this is how occupational claims should be run, it's definitely something that our clients can use, is saying like, okay, let's refute or add this to our disallowance position, that when the claimant's doctor only has these generalized like opinions of what the job duties are, then they're not, that's not credible enough. You need right. to have like something more specific.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any recommendations for clients that you would make based on this decision? Like how would this decision impact like what a client does, maybe like when they have an occupational claim, or what would you do as a litigator?
A lot of, you know, self-insured or carriers will just accept a claim because, oh, how do I disprove that this doesn't? Oh,
that's good, right. Like I can't possibly win, so I might as well just not fight it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's not true. You know, sometimes I think occupational disease claims are actually easier to fight on the medicals versus, you know, a specific injury, because that injury might have happened, and then the question is to what extent. But in this, there's no specific incident, so there's more vagueness and there's more to fight on. A lot of times I actually don't recommend IMEs on occupational claims because it's hard to determine causal relationship when it's something that happened over the last 6 years.
Right.
You know, so there's different strategies and there's different tactics where these aren't claims you should just kind of like lay down and accept it.
Right.
Because they're actually, I don't want to say easy, but there's a really good path to deny them and through that compensability litigation.
They're more straightforward, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, you're not, like when you have one accident that happened at 4:31 a.m. on a Tuesday, like that's actually pretty hard to like investigate and figure out like what happened. Like almost like the voluminous years of working as a carpenter, right? It just tells you like, well, I can't investigate that, right? Like, I'm going to be there. I'm going to go through every single job that he's ever mm-hmm. done. No, I'll probably just like look at his personnel file to determine like what has he been doing? You know, like, is there anything in his employment record that would tell me something? But also, you know, it becomes more straightforward because now you're attacking like whether or not the duties are really like a distinctive feature that has caused the type of injury that you have. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I think if you have a situation where, you know, as a carpenter, let's say I was right hand dominant, right? And I used that every single time, and my shoulder would just give out and give out. And like, I kept pushing, you know, because like, I have mouths to feed. I have to put a roof over my head. And all of a sudden, like, now I'm filing an occupational claim for a rotator cuff tear, like a legitimate, like, you know, thing that can be connected to the action that you're doing. I think it's almost like this idea that when you say like your knees and your shoulders and your elbows and your wrists, it's like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's age.
Like anything else?
Right.
Yeah. Like right. we had a similar case that's currently appealed. The guy retired 13 years ago and claiming occupational claim, claiming nothing else in between that time has ever affected his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's like, come on. Like he's in like what, 70s,
yeah.
80s, like natural aging process.
Right.
You know?
Right. And even his own doctor said that.
Yeah.
And it was still established. It's just, it's very interesting how some of these cases play out.
I think also too, right? I mean, they found the IME doctor more credible, but they didn't go into detail with what
I noticed
the IME was really saying. They kind of just attacked the treating doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to focus on job duties, it might be worth investigating, you know, what types of documents were given to the claimant when he first was employed to say like, this is what your job is, or like, what were the requirements of each of the jobs that he did? Could an IME doctor review that? Because we know the claimant's not bringing that to the treating doctor. Like,
mm-hmm.
here are my job duties, right? He's just going to have this verbal conversation. At least I've never seen that, but we have the option of investigating that and then providing that to an IME doctor to get a leg up. So I think that, you know, that document or list of job duties should be in theory really helpful to push credibility on our side.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the the real hitting point in these occupational disease claims, because even in one of the ones that we have that was established, his own doctor testified to not even knowing anything, any specifics about his job duties. And how are you going to say that it's causally related if you have no idea what the job even is?
Yeah. Right. Like, how can you relate something to something?
Yeah.
I always ask
what the something is.
Right.
I always ask for the job duties, especially with occupational claims, more than the other, because, you know, I want to even know if this, whatever they're claiming, is even in the realm of a possibility.
Sure.
And I kind of start from there to even know if it's like legitimate. And then,
yeah.
Because it's important. I mean, even for non-occupational claims, you want those job duties to determine whether or not the claimant can go back to work if they're not working, or they can go back to full duty if they're on light duty. Job duties are really important, and something that's not always utilized, but it should be.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it's like we've got a lot there, but this is, you know, for anyone that actually cares. Right, sorry for the little pause there. I had to go reach a piece of paper. It's matter of employer Skanska USA. You think it's Skanska or Skanska?
As a
Skanska.
Yeah, as a Northeasterner, it's Skanska.
Skanska. Mm-hmm. Skanska USA Civil Northeast 22224 from the board panel. And it's a decision that really should open a lot of eyes to the compensability of occupational claims as a whole. Like, what general job duties are given to treating doctors versus what specific job duties can we expose, the claimant for not providing, right? Because it's really on the claimant to show that there is a provable compensable claim. So the claimant should be going to the doctor and being very, very specific about all the things that he or she is doing over 27 years as a carpenter. And if they don't do that, this case can hopefully lend itself towards getting more disallowance positions approved. So for Brenna O'Brien and Olivia Barna, my name is Christian Cisson, reminding you to defend from day one.